Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Anna Mateo, Kelly Jean Kelly, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
India has announced plans to land an unpiloted space vehicle on the moon in 2020. The plans mark a continuation of India's drive to expand its space program. The head of India's Space Research Organization, K. Sivan, made the announcement on January 1st. The planned mission, called Chandrayaan 3, aims to land an exploration vehicle on the moon's surface. Chandrayaan is the Sanskrit word for moon vehicle. Sivan recently told reporters that mission planning had progressed smoothly so far. "We are targeting the launch for this year, but it may spill over to next year," Sivan said. Indian sources told the French news agency AFP that officials had set November as a target launch date. India is seeking to become only the fourth nation to land on the moon's surface, after Russia, the United States, and China. Israel made an unsuccessful attempt to land a spacecraft on the moon last April. India has worked to establish itself as a low-cost satellite launcher. It is seeking to become a world space power. However, the country's space program suffered a failed moon landing attempt last September. That mission, Chandrayaan 2, ended with the lander spacecraft crashing on the moon's surface. Chandrayaan 2 had aimed to land on the south pole of the moon, where no other lunar mission had gone before. The area is believed to contain water because it is largely unaffected by the high temperatures of the sun. Chandrayaan 3's Explorer vehicle hopes to confirm the presence of water in the form of lunar ice, which it first discovered during a mission in 2008. Sivan said the new unpiloted mission is expected to cost about $35 million, with additional launch costs. Sivan also announced that India had chosen four candidate astronauts to take part in the country's first planned piloted mission into orbit. That mission is set for late 2021 at the earliest. The four candidates are expected to start training in Russia later this month. Up to three astronauts are to take part in the flight. The piloted mission is one of India's main planned projects to mark the 75th anniversary of India's independence from British rule. I'm Brian Lynn.
In 2013, doctors expected Wu Yi to live only a few more years. He was only 26 years old at the time. Cancer was destroying his body. After 6 months of unending pain, Wu says, a doctor at the Sun Yat-sen University Cancer Center in Guangzhou, China, tried to make him feel better. The doctor gave Wu a note permitting him to take a drug called OxyContin. OxyContin is a painkiller created to help people like Wu, cancer patients, in the final months of life. But those who take OxyContin risk becoming addicted to it. In the United States, about 400,000 people have died from taking too much of the drug. They died after taking increasing amounts of it to be able to feel its effects. Wu said no one in China warned him about addiction risks. He said his doctor told him to take as much OxyContin as he wanted. So he did, and it worked. The drug brought him relief from his pain. 6 years later, Wu was still alive. The cancer was no longer in his body, and the pain was under control. But he was still taking OxyContin. When he tried to stop using it, he found that he could not do it. "This drug is addictive," Wu said, 100% addictive.
Wu fell into drug abuse the same way many Americans do, through a doctor's prescription. But while the U.S. is battling its prescription drug crisis, China appears to be ignoring the rise in the use of painkillers there. The country offers few treatment choices for addicts, and it does not count prescription drug addiction in its official count of drug abuse. Hao Wei is president of the Chinese Association of Drug Abuse Prevention and Treatment. He said he believes abuse of prescription drugs is limited in China, but he adds that official data largely overlooks it. Chinese officials say the situation in the United States is different than the situation in China. In the U.S., they say, the painkiller addiction epidemic comes from the large number of people who are asking for the drugs. They also say use of the drugs is not well controlled. In China, strict laws and policies govern where and how painkillers can be given. But more painkillers may be available in China than officials admit. Addicts can turn to online black markets for OxyContin and other prescription drugs.
Wu Yi says his parents locked away his painkillers. After that, he was one of the people looking for the drugs on the internet. He joined an online group of abusers and dealers. They connected with grieving family members who were trying to give away leftover pain medicine after a loved one had died. By then, Wu was trying hard to limit the number of pills he used every day. In April 2019, he ran out of money and was forced to stop taking OxyContin completely. Quitting the drug was extremely difficult, however. He was not able to sleep for 4 days. Finally, a doctor gave him sleeping pills and a warning. Do not take more than 3 at a time. Wu took 15. For weeks, Wu visited a number of doctors to get more sleeping pills. He took so many that the pills stunned him. He did not sleep. Instead, he would fall down unconscious. "It's good I didn't die," he said. Doctors finally sent him to a hospital for the mentally ill. But Wu did not believe he had a mental problem. He told doctors he was going through withdrawal, the painful process when someone stops using an addictive drug. AP reporters later called the mental hospital. The man who picked up the phone said, the place does not have an addiction treatment program. And he said doctors had never dealt with prescription pill abuse. In time, Wu's withdrawal symptoms eased without medical help.
I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Ana Mateo.
A Google artificial intelligence system was as good as expert radiologists at discovering which women had breast cancer in a new study. The system made the findings from thousands of mammogram images researchers in the United States and Britain reported. This is the newest study to show that artificial intelligence, or AI, may improve the accuracy of mammograms. Breast cancer affects 1 in 8 women around the world. The study was published in the journal Nature. The American Cancer Society says radiologists miss about 20% of breast cancers in mammograms, and many women who get the tests have a false positive result at some point. A false positive result shows a woman with cancer even though she does not have it. The findings of the study were developed with DeepMind AI, which joined with Google Health in September. The study results represent a big step toward the possibility of early breast cancer detection, said Maziar Edamati. He is one of the study writers and based at Northwestern Medicine in Chicago. The team included researchers at Imperial College London and Britain's National Health Service. Together, they trained the AI system to identify breast cancers on tens of thousands of mammograms. They then compared the AI system's performance with the actual results from a set of 25,856 mammograms in the United Kingdom and 3,097 from the United States. The study showed the AI system could identify cancers with a similar level of accuracy to expert radiologists. At the same time, it reduced the number of false positive results by 5.7% in the American patients and 1.2% in the British patients. It also cut the number of false negatives, where tests are wrongly listed as normal, by 9.4% in the American group and 2.7% in the British group. These results show differences in how mammograms are read. In the U.S., only one radiologist reads the results and the tests are done every 1 to 2 years. In Britain, the tests are done every 3 years and each is read by 2 radiologists. When they disagree, a 3rd radiologist reads it. In a separate test, the researchers put the AI system against 6 radiologists and found it performed better at correctly detecting breast cancers. Connie Lehman is chief of the breast imaging department at Harvard's Massachusetts General Hospital. She said the results agree with findings from many groups using AI to improve cancer detection in mammograms, including her own work. The idea of using computers to improve cancer detection has been around for years. And computer-aided detection, or CAD, systems are common in mammography health centers, but CAD has not improved performance in health practice. The issue, Lehman said, is that current CAD programs were trained to identify things human radiologists can see. But with AI, computers learn to find cancers based on the actual results of thousands of mammograms. So AI has the possibility of going beyond human ability to identify small signs the human eye and brain cannot. Maziar Edamati added that the study has shown in tens of thousands of mammograms that AI can make a very well-informed decision. The study has some limitations. Most of the tests were done using the same type of imaging equipment, and the U.S. group had a lot of patients with confirmed breast cancers. Importantly, the team has not yet shown that the tool improves patient care, said Dr. Lisa Watanabe. She is chief medical officer of CureMetrics, a company whose AI mammogram program won U.S. approval last year. She noted that AI is only helpful if it creates noticeable progress for radiologists. Edamati agreed that those studies are needed, as is regulatory approval, a process that could take many years. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President James Garfield was shot and seriously wounded in the summer of 1881. The man who shot him said he supported the political group that supported Vice President Chester Arthur. The gunman was found to be insane. But some people were ready to believe the worst about Vice President Arthur. They knew that many of the Vice President's political allies disliked President Garfield. They thought the Vice President might have helped the gunman in some way. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell what happened after President Garfield was shot.
For a time, it seemed the president might get better. But the bullet wound became infected. He died of the infection 2 months after he was shot. Vice President Arthur took the oath of office a few hours after the president's death. Chester Arthur had been a successful lawyer. He had worked in politics for a number of years, but he had never before held an elected office. Many Americans questioned his ability to serve in the White House. One person put it this way: Chet Arthur, President of the United States? Good God!
Almost everyone feared Arthur would be a tool of a Republican Party leader in New York, Roscoe Conkling. They were sure Conkling would be the real power in Arthur's administration. They were wrong. Chester Arthur surprised everyone. He broke all his ties with the Conkling political machine. He remained independent of any party group. Arthur asked Garfield's cabinet to resign. He chose new men for all but one department.
In his first message to Congress, President Arthur asked for changes in the way government jobs were filled. He proposed a new civil service system that would let ability, not politics, decide who got government jobs. Republican Party leaders opposed these proposals. The civil service system would stop them from giving federal jobs to their supporters. It would destroy much of their power. These Republican leaders controlled Congress. They refused to act on the civil service proposals.
Civil service reform, however, was an important issue. President Garfield had been assassinated by a man who believed he should have gotten a government job because of his politics. Also, new cases of dishonesty had been discovered in the Post Office Department. The public began to demand laws to clean up the civil service. In 1882, a new Congress was elected. The new Congress was controlled by the Democratic Party. President Arthur again appealed for civil service reform. This time, he got results. The new Congress passed a civil service bill that required 10% of all federal jobs to be filled through competitive examinations. This 10% included half the officials in the Post Office Department. It included most workers at federal customs houses. The bill also said it was illegal for politicians to ask government employees for campaign money, and it set up a civil service committee to enforce the new law.
President Arthur also found himself faced with an unusual problem. The government was earning more money than it needed. Most of the money came from tariffs, taxes on imports. Each year, tariffs brought in $100 million more than the government needed. The import taxes had been set high to protect American industries from foreign competition. President Arthur wanted to reduce the tariffs. Congress wanted to keep them high. Industrial leaders wanted to keep them high, too. They did not want to compete with low-priced foreign products.
Congress saw no problem with the extra money brought in by high tariffs. It found many ways to spend it. For example, Congress raised payments to soldiers who had fought in the Civil War during the 1860s. It also approved money to build roads, bridges, and waterways throughout the country. Many of these things were not needed. They were approved for political purposes. They put government money into the home areas of powerful congressmen. In 1882, Congress passed the Rivers and Harbors Bill. The bill would cost almost $19 million. President Arthur vetoed the bill. He said it would waste too much money, but Congress passed the bill into law over his veto.
Next, President Arthur urged Congress to form a committee to find a way to reduce tariffs. Congress formed the committee. The committee proposed that tariffs be reduced by 20%. But Congress did not consider the proposal when it began debating a new tariff bill. President Arthur was more successful in getting Congress to reduce the public debt. During his term, the debt was cut by more than $400 million.
Chester Arthur's efforts for honest government and lower taxes won him much support among the people, but he could not win the support of his Republican Party. Arthur wanted to serve another 4 years in the White House. His name was put before the Republican nominating convention in 1884. The name of Senator James Blaine of Maine also was put before the convention. On the first ballot, Blaine received 334 votes. Arthur got only 278. 3 ballots later, Blaine won the presidential nomination. However, many Republicans refused to support Blaine. They accused him of being dishonest. They said he was controlled by powerful politicians.
The Democratic Party chose New York Governor Grover Cleveland as its presidential candidate. Like Chester Arthur at the national level, Grover Cleveland was known for fighting dishonesty in government at the local level. He began as mayor of the city of Buffalo, New York. He cleaned up the city government and saved the taxpayers much money. Next, he was elected governor of New York State. There, too, he helped end dishonesty in government. Cleveland refused to give jobs to Democrats because of their political ties. Instead, he filled state jobs with men of ability. This early success helped him win the Democratic presidential nomination.
The campaign of 1884 between Republican Blaine and Democrat Cleveland was one of the most bitter in American political history. A group of Republicans who opposed Blaine published letters to prove he was dishonest. Blaine had written the letters several years earlier during a shameful incident concerning the sale of railroad stock. Now he was forced to defend himself against those old charges.
Blaine's supporters fought back by discovering a scandal in Cleveland's past. Grover Cleveland had never married, but more than 10 years earlier, he had been involved with a young woman. The woman gave birth to a boy. Cleveland was not sure the boy was his son, but he accepted responsibility for the child. He sent money to help care for him. A Republican newspaper published the story. Soon, Republican crowds were shouting a joke about it. "Ma, Ma, where's my pa?" "Gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha."
Both candidates campaigned hard. It was clear to everyone that the vote would be close. Election day was cold and rainy. Early results showed the two candidates with almost the same number of electoral votes. The winner would be the one who captured a majority of the popular votes in New York State. That candidate would then get all of New York's electoral votes. It was not until 3 days after the voting that election officials announced Cleveland had won. His victory set off wild celebrations among Democrats across the country. Grover Cleveland really was going to the White House. Ha, ha, ha. His election would bring some important changes to the country.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.